This hour of Ring of Fire is brought to you by the Goldwater Law Firm, a stellar organization. Visit them online, bobgoldwater.com.
Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Sam Cedar. Today on Ring of Fire, journalist Dan Frumkin will join us to discuss the failures of the mainstream media this past year. David Dayan from Fire Dog Lake News will be here to talk about the disastrous plan to gut the social safety net as part of the grand bargain. Investigative journalist Josh Idelson will tell us about Michigan Governor Rick Snyder's assault on organized labor. Democratic strategist and consultant Eric Burns will be here to tell us about the fight to fix the filibuster. Author Nancy Cohen will discuss the reasons behind the GOP's decision to vote against an international treaty to help protect the disabled. Attorney Virginia Buchanan will tell us about the hidden dangers lurking in your energy drinks. And Paul Waldman, contributing editor at the American Prospect, will tell us if the GOP has gone too far into the fringe to ever be able to move back to the center. You can follow Ring of Fire on Facebook or on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. And you can keep up with the latest progressive news on our new redesigned website at ringoffireradio.com. And if you want to help support Ring of Fire, you can subscribe to our weekly podcast or you can sponsor an hour of our show. You can sign up for both online at ringoffireradio.com. This hour of Ring of Fire is brought to you by Luke Rambo. Luke writes, "Thanks AM 1090 for being a progressive voice on the weekends hosting the Ring of Fire show with Robert Kennedy Jr., Mike Papantonio, and Sam Cedar. We need to hear your progressive voices on the weekend. I'm the owner of Rambo Total Pest Control in Seattle. I had the chance to introduce myself and my company to President Obama, and he said, hey, the ads write themselves. We're proud to be providing the pest control services to King and Pierce counties in the greater Seattle area. Check us out at rambopest.com. Well, thank you, Luke Rambo. So, Pap, the big story, of course, this week is we have seen the latest frontal attack on the middle class and on workers in this country come out of a really what turns out to be basically a cabal in Michigan, legislation that was stormed through in the lame duck session by a governor who promised he would never sign that piece of legislation.
The ugly part of legislation, once you start understanding it, what they tried to do is attach a part of really some financing kind of legislation to make it impossible for people to vote on the idea of right to work. In other words, they saw what happened in states where they could vote, and voters voted that idea down. So the real issue, you know, people say right to work. Well, it's right to work for less money. It's the right to work for no benefits. It's the right to work for no holidays or vacation or health insurance. That's what right to work means. But, you know, it sounds like it's something really positive. Oh, yeah, right to work. We all ought to have the right to work. But it is the right to work in Walmart conditions. And that's the idiotic, brain-dead media not saying, what does that mean? And so all of a sudden, it takes on this idea that it's something good. You know, how often have we seen that? I mean, constantly.
Well, yes. I mean, the fact is that in the 23, now 24 states in the country where they have these so-called right-to-work laws, wages are lower for comparable work. We see that worker deaths are somewhere around the neighborhood of 33% higher. Because, of course, you don't have unions in there forcing management to do their due diligence in providing for worker safety. And, you know, the bottom line is that this is an attack on the economic power of unions, on the political power of unions. It is a way of depressing wages.
It's bigger than that. I mean, you really think about it. This is not just about labor. Look, you know, in Michigan— You had Obama lead by 9 points. So all of a sudden you have these, you know, you've got the right wing saying, well, we can't let that happen again. What you find, first of all, you begin with, let's look at the right to work states. Out of the 10 most poverty-stricken states in America, 10 of the most poverty-stricken, I mean horrible poverty, 8 of them are right-to-work states. So, but along with that thing of right-to-work comes other stuff. As you point out, they get to do away with health insurance. They get to do away with things like pension. They get to really squeeze people on salaries and wages. And if you look at right-to-work states, I think on wages alone, you're about 4% below the national average. On pension benefits, I think you're below somewhere around 5 to 10% below the national average. But the thing that you're headed towards in that discussion that you just started was that this is really a way to clobber Democrats, because right-to-work states are, you know, if you take a look, they're all red. And what they want to do is they want to be able to take away the people's power to be able to organize politically, while the billionaires have limitless money. You see, if you take away the union's organization, who else is out there organizing against the baby inheritance billionaires? So I mean, this is a lot more fun. This is a lot more significant than just one state has a right to work law.
Oh, absolutely. And, if, you know, like you say, this is a two or three for them, because it depresses wages. It means that they can run roughshod over workers. And it also depresses the political power of those unions to deal with it. And people should keep in mind that we are talking about Michigan, which was the birthplace of the UAW, which was arguably the most powerful union in the country. And if not the, certainly one of. And it was also the UAW under Reuther, who was the leader of that union for, I don't know how many, 40 years or so, was also a huge force for social change in this country. Right. People forget that Walter Reuther, he marched with Martin Luther King, that he was out in the forefront of the social progressive issues, far more so than maybe other unions, in fact. And this is not going to go over easy in Michigan. Now, I've seen a lot of different reporting as to whether or not there's an opportunity for a referendum. This past week, we saw nearly 20,000 people out at the Capitol in Lansing agitating against Governor Snyder signing this bill. There is, my understanding is that there's going to be an opportunity, perhaps. There's a lot of hurdles to be, and they're going to need more signatures than a normal referendum, but there is going to be an opportunity. So this is not, this is just the beginning of this.
Oh, yeah, it is. First of all, I think they can win in court because of the way that this thing came about. So, but here's the important. These people are saying, "Oh my God, this is the end of unions." No, this is the beginning. This is the pivotal rebirth of unions. You don't go to Michigan, where you have more unions than any state in America, and say, "This is where we're gonna pose our fight." And so what we're going to see is it's going to be bigger than Wisconsin, because they're already organizing nationally. They realize that this has ramifications way, way beyond just Michigan. They realize that what's really at stake here is just the basic right for people to be able to organize and to be able to confront the other side in political process. But, you know, the other part of the story, Sam, think about Rick Snyder. I mean, again, how does mainstream media always screw it up? I mean, go back and look at the stories from mainstream media. Oh, this is a different Republican. He's not a typical riffraff teabag
super nerd or whatever.
Yeah, he's
it was
a super businessman nerd, and he doesn't care anything about these cultural social issues. He simply wants to balance the budget. Again, the media has become so frigging useless. Turn it off. Stop, end your subscription to the newspaper and go online, because that's the only place you get information anymore. It's just the media is, again, they should be shamed by this. They should be embarrassed by this. How do you invent this lie, this fraud, Rick Scott? And I think Rick Scott, if you want to know the truth, Rick Snyder, excuse me. I think Rick Snyder's career may be over.
I think you might be right. And, you know, later in the program, I'm going to be talking to Josh Idelson, who's been writing quite a bit on what was the money behind Rick Snyder, and why did he supposedly evolve his position, although I think it was quite clear he had this position from the get-go.
Oh, of course.
We got to take a break. We'll be back in just a minute with more news. Welcome back to Ring of Fire. I'm Sam Cedar here with Mike Papantonio. Remember, if you want to help support Ring of Fire, you can sponsor an hour of our show. You can sign up online at ringoffireradio.com. It's your support that helps keep us on the air. This hour of Ring of Fire is brought to you by Luke Rambo. Luke writes, thanks AM 1090 for being a progressive voice on the weekends, hosting the Ring of Fire show with Robert Kennedy Jr., Mike Papantonio, and Sam Cedar. We need to hear your progressive voices on the weekend. I'm the owner of Rambo Total Pest Control in Seattle. I had the chance to introduce myself and my company to President Obama, and he said, hey, the ads write themselves. We're proud to be providing pest control services to King and Pierce counties in the greater Seattle area. Check us out at RamboPest.com. And thank you, Luke, for your support. Now let's get back to the Ring of Fire News of the Week. So, Pap, the other thing that happened, one of the things that happened this week, of course, was that the Supreme Court declared technically, I guess, at the end of last week, that it will take up the issue of marriage equality in this coming term of the Supreme Court. It accepted a challenge to the Defense of Marriage Act, which, you know, basically says that even if a state has declared same-sex marriage constitutional within that state, other states don't have to recognize it in the same way that they would if it was a opposite sex marriage. And so you have Supreme Court taking up that challenge to the Defense of Marriage Act. It's also deciding to take up a Proposition 8, which was the so-called Hate Amendment in California, which was brought by a lesbian widow. And so with this in the backdrop, we got Antonin Scalia. I know he's your favorite Supreme Court justice.
He honestly is a fool in a black robe. He's a, you know, you don't have to take my word for it. Go back and do your due diligence on Scalia. He's never distinguished himself as a lawyer, never distinguished himself as a judge. He's a political hack fool that just happened to make it to the Supreme Court. And you know what? Of course, he knows where the court's going to go on this, doesn't he? I mean, that's why you hear his crazy statements.
I think that's right. I mean, this past week he was at Princeton University. He was asked by a student as to why he had equated laws banning with sodomy with those barring murder.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I don't think it's a necessary comparison, but I think it's effective. It's a form of argument I thought you would have known. It's called the reduction to absurd. He told this student, he said, if we cannot have moral feelings against homosexuality, can we have it against murder?
Yeah.
This, of course, is absurd.
Well, look, here, let me tell you where I think this is going to land, Sam. I mean, you know, people spend so much time talking about issues like DOMA, and they're important. But you know what? This court has got things that are the lifeblood of people, of everybody. They've got corporate issues that can destroy people's rights to, you know, to do anything, whether it's DOMA, whether it's a pharmaceutical case, whether it's horribly injured. They've got cases before them that they're going to give you something like DOMA, okay? And then in the court's going to say, oh, everybody's going to say, wow, what a, you know, this is a moderate court. This is a, and at the same time they give you something like DOMA, they're going to go behind your back and they're going to give corporate America everything. Corporate America is going to get everything they ask for from this court, just like they have done every time. The success rate of corporate America in front of this court is 85%. 85%. You know, again, I don't mean to say it's an important issue. But you got the media focusing on that when you have other issues besides in front of this court that are just if they allow corporate America to do some of the things that this court is looking at and they're considering, it is just going to be mayhem for the average person.
I think this is a great point, and frankly, Pap, I mean, it's one point that we don't hear enough on the left. I mean, you know, so much of the Affordable Care ruling by the Supreme Court sort of supposedly gave John Roberts all of this room and bought him all of this credibility. But in fact, it's the cases that get adjudicated every day at the Supreme Court that we don't hear about, that the corporate press, of course, is not going to report upon because half of them have implications for the companies that own them.
That's right. But we'll hear about DOMA and we'll hear about, again, I'm not minimizing the importance of any of this stuff. But we have to be honest with ourselves. There's cases in front of this court right now that will change the lives of children for three generations. And, you know, but it is the dead stream media. It is the absolutely lame brain media that we go to. They have us talking about DOMA when we ought to be talking about that plus five or six other very significant
right.
issues.
And, you know, and speaking of corporate malfeasance, more bad news down in your neck of the woods. There has been studies showing that the dispersant used by the BP in the oil spill actually made what was in the water 50 times more toxic.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? They were being told that when it was happening. You had very good toxicologists say, don't do that. Don't put core exit in the water. Don't do it, because all you're going to do is you're going to sink the oil, and it's going to look good for you. People
right.
aren't going to be able to calculate how much damage you did, because it's going to sink to 2,000 feet where it never breaks up. But when you put the core exit in, the core exit doesn't sink. You see, the core exit continues moving on through the entire ecosystem. And they were told that, but you know, the administration went along with it. The administration knew that they wanted to go along with it because, again, we like to think, oh, you know, they're out to take care of the average people out there, but they're not. They're out to take care of corporate America, and this is a good example of it.
And we also hear on the heels of that report that Shell, which has obviously a lot of investment in drilling in the Arctic, that their spill gear cannot withstand even the simplest of tests up there.
Right. Yeah.
How many more catastrophes? How much more damage environmentally? How much of the price of pulling this oil out of the ground must be spread amongst the rest of society while the profits are privatized? How much should we bear? We've got to take a break before I give you a moment to answer it. We'll be right back, Pat. Back on Ring of Fire, I'm Sam Cedar. Now let's get back to our buried stories of the past week that the traditional media missed. And don't forget that you can always get the latest news and commentary that matters to progressives the most on our newly designed website at ringoffireradio.com. This hour of Ring of Fire is brought to you by The Issue Wonk. Can't keep up with all the issues? Let The Issue Wonk help. Subscribe today to receive a summary of the latest issues from the top news sources around the world. And it's absolutely free. So, Pap, one story that got very little attention, that it was a study that broke a couple of weeks ago now, a week and a half, I guess, but it got very little attention, and it becomes even more relevant in the context of what we know is happening on the environmental front and what environmental activists are up to. Time magazine reported on this, if you can believe it, that there was...
They still have a magazine?
My understanding is they do. But
the last time I saw Time, honest to God, if they delivered it in your front yard, they'd have to deliver it with a rock, just so something would hold it.
Well, that's the amazing thing, is that, you know, they rarely cover anything that is in any way an affront to their corporate sponsors, and of course they don't make that last connection, right? It's almost like the phone company that will wire the streets, but to get from the street to your house, that's up to you.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
So,
but I'm glad to hear they're still in business. I really am. I thought they did some kind of joint deal with Daily Beast or
That's Newsweek.
Okay,
that's
the same thing, you know.
So you've got the Archives of General Psychiatry researchers in California looked at 500 children living in the state and found, now this is not a direct causation, necessarily, but they found a very strong correlation between rates of autism and the exposure that children had at a very young age, mm-hmm. at a very, very young age, with things like traffic volume, vehicle emissions, wind patterns, essentially pollutants that are put in the air from fossil fuels.
Right.
And this is just one more example.
Well, by the way, this wasn't really equivocal stuff. This was done. This is pretty good epidemiology. This isn't just some hack saying, you know.
This is a serious study. Right. They can't make a direct link quite yet.
Well, you rarely can. Epidemiology can take you right to the edge of it. It can give you the probability factors, but it's never gonna be the silver bullet. But I will tell you this: I love this story, especially on heels of the idea that there's a campaign that's telling the truth, and that is Exxon hate your children. Exxon would kill your children if they thought they could make another dollar. Exxon is killing your children, and so there's this. I love this ad campaign out there. It's elegantly true. It's just an elegant, simple little presentation that they say, you know, here at Exxon, we hate your children. So Exxon is like all out of control over this, man. They're hiring the Madison Avenue types. They're having, you know, the whole regular suspect bunch of corporate, you know, toady lawyers that always show up for corporate America every time they kill somebody. But Exxon's killing your children. There's no question about it. And they and if you think about it, Bill McKibben,
yep,
is finally, he's the guy leading charges like this, saying, look, these guys are criminals. Why do we allow them to be criminals and not talk about it? Matter of fact, the earth is melting and they're trying to figure out, how do we drill in the Arctic? After we've melted the Arctic, how do we drill? Now, interesting thing about that, Sam, while they were telling all of us that the Arctic isn't melting, that there is no such thing as global climate change, they were buying up leases in the Arctic because they knew it was melting.
Right, and they know it's going to be far more cheaper for them to access, and they're going to have the capacity now to access any type of fossil fuel reserves in that region. And one of the things that's happening, and one of the things I think that Exxon's responding to, and you're right, Bill McKibben has been touring the country talking about this. He's got that Do the Math tour.
Yeah.
One of the things that they're really focusing on is getting universities to divest from their holdings in these companies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this, I think, is what is really scaring Exxon, because we know that this is where the most amount of pressure came in this country against the apartheid regime in South Africa.
It's what stopped apartheid. I mean, it's exactly what stopped it. And McKibben realizes that, and he remembers that. And now he says, let's use this on Exxon and Mobil and, you know, BP and all of the corporate thugs that do hate your children. I mean, say it to yourself and then say it out loud. Exxon hates your children, because they do. They know exactly what they're doing. They know that all the numbers, all the projections about when our planet reaches that critical tipping point of no return, when you reach to the point to where you have an environment, the ecosystems in chaos, then our children and their children are affected by it if we make it that far. So they know what they're doing, and they knew that when they went out and paid all of these biostitutes, these university whores, to work and create these stories that there was no such thing as global warming, and they knew they were paying them, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $100,000 to lie. They knew that 30 to 35 years ago, Sam, and that's how long they've been doing this. And so to be able to say, when you can say, Exxon hates my children, you will honestly arrive at the truth of where we are with all this right now.
And this is, again, you know, you deal with this all the time in your practice, where you have these corporations make the determination that even if we ever get held accountable, we're talking about chump change because this is just we're just in this for the profits, and we'll let society deal with the implications of what the byproducts of us making record-breaking profits, and I'm talking globally and all of time. They're going to say
hell with the planet. The thing is, they know there's nowhere they can go after they destroy the damn planet. There's no place on the globe that they're going to be able to go, that they're going to be unaffected. They know their children have to live with it, but they still sit down and have dinner with their children at the dinner table, looking across the table, understanding they're killing their children. They're killing our children, and it's okay with them because they are psychopaths. I don't know. There's no nice way to put this until you can get that in your head that these are companies that are criminal companies. McKibben's out there saying it. McKibben is making a great he's doing a great job creating this picture of what we can't force ourselves to say.
Well, let me ask you this question, because this is obviously something that I have wrestled with, and I know you have wrestled with, maybe, and you've settled it. But I have a feeling that these executives sit around and they say, all right, it may be the case that my business is contributing to global warming, and maybe, there's a certain inevitability to it, and we're just going to adapt, is what one of these executives said. Well, human beings will adapt. And in their mind, they're like, well, if we're making money hand over fist, the best thing I can do for my children to help them adapt is to be the ones who are sitting on top of a pile of money so they can buy their ways into
the protection, I guess, maybe on another planet. I don't know. I've actually sat across people in depositions, Sam, corporate types, number one, number two, number three in the corporation. They know that the pharmaceutical is in question is killing people. They know that maybe the pharmaceutical has the propensity to kill children. And you ask them, you always get to that question. Well, now let me ask you something. You sell this product and you make $4 billion a year selling. Does your family take the product?
Right.
It'll always be no. It'll always be no. It's somebody else's child. It's okay. It's somebody else, because they feel like somehow they're going to escape the problem.
Right. And too often, they get away with it. We got to take a break when we come back. Let's hear about HSBC Holdings, which didn't quite get away with it, or maybe they did a little.
Oh, no, they got away with it.
We'll talk about that. And also, Republicans in Texas are learning a little lesson about unintended consequences. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Ring of Fire. I'm Sam Cedar, here with Mike Papantonio and Bobby Kennedy. This hour, Ring of Fire is brought to you by The Issue Wonk. Can't keep up with all the issues? Let The Issue Wonk help. Subscribe today to receive a summary of the latest issues from the top news sources around the world. And it's totally and absolutely free. Let's pick up with more news and analysis that progressives need to know. So, Pap, there's a big story out there about HSBC, and we are supposed to believe that this bank, essentially, paying a record $1.92 billion in fines to U.S. authorities is some type of severe punishment on these guys. Why don't you tell us about what they did and whether or not they got away with it?
Well, they're part of the drug culture. They've been washing money for the drug cartels out of Colombia. At Colombia's Norte de Valle, the whole entire cartel, one of the biggest cartels in the country. They've laundered the number that the U.S. Justice Department thinks it is only approaching about $1 billion. But when you talk to people who really know the stories behind the stories, and you read. I've been reading this story for, years now. It was $1 billion 3 years ago. And so HSB becomes part of the money laundering, and the U.S. Justice Department, as we're used to seeing, rather than throwing anybody in prison, they says, hey, look, we're going to y'all pay $1.2 billion and everything's going to be okay. And so they knew exactly who made the decisions. They had the names of everybody who made the decisions to launder the money through HSB, through America, by the UK, by, you know, UK by way of America. They had the name of the Mexican traffickers. The Mexican traffickers told them who they dealt with. They had everything. And they still say, well, no, we can't do anything. And, you know, documents were filed in federal court in Brooklyn with the Justice Department, showed that the bank violated sanctions of all kinds, but doing business with Iran when they weren't supposed to, doing business with Libya, Sudan, Cuba, Burma, and doing business with the drug cartel out of Mexico, the same people that have been chopping people's heads off, the same people who are murdering our federal agents, the same people who are murdering our soldiers that are sent down to Mexico to stop all this. HSBC was part of the drug ring, and nobody went to jail.
Well, you know, the CEO, Stuart Gulliver, though, however, did say, "We accept responsibility for our past mistakes, and we have said we are profoundly sorry for them, and we do so again. The HSBC of today is fundamentally different organization from the one that made those mistakes." It is stunning the lack of accountability that these banks are held to. Meanwhile, if you're caught with a gram of pot, and the Obama administration is gearing up to figure out how they're going to go in and deal with these two states that have fully legalized marijuana and are setting up regulatory schemes for them, it's just absurd. I mean, this is the dynamic that we've been dealing with. It's a you know, if you're a little guy on the street who's smoking a joint and hurting no one, well, you can be sent to prison. If you're a head of a bank and you're laundering billions of dollars of drug money, then you just get basically charged a check cashing
fee.
Right,
and the same attorney general who's calling all these shots is the same attorney general who's, by the way, this isn't just happening by way of the attorney Obama is making these decisions right along with the U.S. Justice Department, okay? Something like this doesn't happen without the president or the people very close to him knowing what's happening. We got an Obama administration that has just let drug traffickers go for you know, washing the money to the tune of several billion dollars before it's all over, I'm sure. But he wants to go after Colorado. He wants to go after Washington because they now have drug laws that says, yeah, you can grow marijuana, you can use marijuana, and for medical reasons and other reasons. And so, but you have them going after them because you have these old federal agency types that are, you know, they've been carrying on the war on pot for so long with the enforcement of the Controlled Substance Act that they don't know anything else. And so let's go shut all let's shut them down in Colorado. Let's let these banksters go free, you know, and who's done the most harm here?
Right. It's ridiculous. And there's a lot of movement. Jimmy Carter this week, for what it's worth, guys like Richard Branson, the chair of the Virgin Group, they're coming out and they're pushing for an end to this incredibly wasteful drug war, which ends up basically lining the coffers of organizations like this HSBC. So when people wonder why there is such fervor for things like the drug war, people have to understand there's a tremendous amount of money to be made by some very well entrenched interests in this country by keeping all this stuff on the black market. I want to turn to some other story.
Oh, but let me just say, just understand when you're doing business with a bank like this. HSBC, you're doing business with criminals. You know, the president, the president of the company, he can apologize and say, "We're really sorry. We wish we hadn't done that. Thank you for not putting any of us in prison." But pull your money out of this organization. Don't do business with this organization.
There's a story I really wanted to get to because this is really just stunning. You have lawmakers in Texas, when they passed a budget in 2011, that basically cut $73 million of family planning services. You know, these are a lot of this went to Planned Parenthood, not Planned Parenthood clinics that provided abortion, because that was not the issue, but Planned Parenthood clinics which provided women's health care, which provided some form of family planning in terms of providing contraception, telling women and educating them about other issues of family planning. Well, it turns out that the a Health and Human Services Commission in Texas is now told the Texas lawmakers that poor women 2 years out from now will deliver an estimated more than 23,000 more babies. It will end up costing the state. Remember, they saved supposedly $73 million. That was the auspices in which they were doing it. It's going to cost taxpayers upwards around $270 million.
Isn't that another reason that we want them to secede, because they now become a drain in so many ways?
Absolutely. take a hike. Now, the funny thing is that these Texas lawmakers, even though they were told these exact figures when they passed this bill, are all starting to scramble around trying to figure out how they can restore some type of family planning services to clinics that they've already cut. All because this Republican Party is still on this jihad where they want to control women's bodies.
It is so Texas. How about Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell introduces legislation? He thinks he's being cute. So he comes up with this legislation that it's to raise the debt ceiling. And he thinks, well, you know, the intent was to show that even, you know, Democrats wouldn't support such a bill. And so all of a sudden, Harry Reid's smart enough to call it for a vote. He says, okay, let's vote. Let's vote on it, Mitch McConnell. And so Mitch McConnell then has to filibuster for hours. He has to filibuster his own bill. It's never happened. Never happened.
Yeah, you got to give them credit for that. I mean, they're getting so desperate now that they're actually breaking all-time records for ridiculousness in filibustering a bill that he introduced literally hours before.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's all part of the burn down of this company of the GOP. And the burn down is, until they get rid of this ugly little creature that has possession of them, which is the Tea Party, until they completely go through that, get rid of them, not much is going to change. Right now, you know, you've got them trying to secretly get rid of committee members, Republican committee members that have come up through the Tea Party movement.
Yep.
They're doing that behind closed doors. You have all of the talking heads on television that have generally been Republican apologists that are now blaming Rush Limbaugh and blaming Glenn Beck for their problems and asking them to go away. I mean, it's, you know, you've got DeMint resigning and getting the hell out of the Senate. Yep. Because it's such a disaster. It's all bad for him.
All right, well, Pap, until next week, I'm sure there'll be more craziness.
All right, Sam. Coming up on Ring of Fire, political consultant and writer Eric Burns is going to be here to talk to me about the Democrats' option for dealing with obstructionists in the GOP. That's just ahead. Stay with me right here on Ring of Fire. I'm Mike Papantonio, and you've been listening to a free sample of Ring of Fire Radio. If you'd like to listen to the full show, subscribe to our weekly podcast at our website at ringoffireradio.com. It's your support that helps keep us on the air.